to the Connect Kindness podcast, where we connect people with organizations to inspire kindness. I'm your host, Crystal Aziz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tim Evans.
In today's episode, we interview Eric Skaggs, the founder of Grades for Good. Their mission is to support academics for marginalized youth and underserved parents.
Eric opens up about the unique path that led him to starting Grades for Good and how he has dedicated his life to teaching and inspiring our youth. He shares the importance of always asking questions and continually learning, as well as shares the details of the programs he is building to help underserved communities. Eric has a visionary mind, and it was a pleasure learning more about his organization. So without further ado, this is our interview with Eric Skaggs, the founder of Grades for Good.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Connect Kindness podcast today. Can you share with our listeners about your organization and what needs you serve?
That's fine. My name is Eric Skaggs. I'm the founder and CEO for Grades for Good. We're a brand new nonprofit serving the areas of South Bay, Los Angeles, as well as Orange. Our mission is to give academic support to marginalized students, as well as their underserved parent. I guess I can flow right into the background. How did I come about launching this nonprofit? And we're literally maybe 3 or 4 months old now. And it all stems from my background in education. And even before that, my academia covers a BA in animation and a BA in creative writing, both out of San Francisco State University. Back in the early 90s, when Cal State San Francisco was the only one offering a degree in animation. And I've always been an artist. I love movement. And what better movement than movement of art? So I dove into the film program, and I've always been a lover of poetry and fiction. And so I got into creative writing, which is a good merger of the two. And I've always been very imaginative and creative. So I brought that to the world of the classroom and taught English for 13 years. Before that, I did jump into animation. I didn't have the courage to go knocking on the mouse's door there in Anaheim with the Disney, but I did have the courage to step into the world of internet. And in 2000, do you remember back in those days when you would go to a website and that irritating GIF file banner ad would keep popping up and you would try to click? Yeah, that was me.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. Welcome. I take great pride in those little 3-second animated loops. It took me around. It took me from South Bay, LA up to Modesto, the armpit of California, although there is some beautiful orchards out there. I worked out of Manteca. I lived in Modesto, and I helped a little growing internet business take root there in that area. And I was teaching myself. So it was a very mom-pa small studio. And basically, and it leads into my instructional career, because they said, we know you don't have access to all this new animation and graphic design programs. We will supply you with that. But the catch is you're going to have to teach yourself and then later teach our interns the same programs and skills. So what was interesting, about halfway through my tenure at this little internet business, I would, spend all night teaching myself the tutorials, and then I would create these little exercises for my two interns. And I remember one day I was getting them started, and I took a little break for myself. I was walking to the water cooler, and the guy in marketing said, Eric, you're a teacher, right? And I said, no, my mom is, and my grandfather has been. But no, I've never taught. He said, well, you're creating lesson plans right now. I could overhear you through the cubicles. And I went, oh yeah, I guess I am. And so that came to fruition later on, about a year later, after moving from Manteca and doing some more animation in Kansas, which is a beautiful part of our country. I warned our CEO that he was pushing the limits of making promises to these big Major League Baseball personalities, because that's what I was working for at the time, and that we were a small team and we wouldn't be able to carry through with his promises. And lo and behold, we lost our investments. And that was right when the bubble burst. I mean, we were like a microcosm of all those over promises. And indeed, we all lost our jobs. And that's when my mom said, are you ready for some stability? I said, yes. And she goes, are you ready to be a teacher? Because I guess she knew I had it in me. So I said, yes, I am. She goes, so she sent me the gas money and I drove back home from Kansas back to Redondo Beach where I grew up. And actually, I moved down to Orange County where I spent my junior college years at Saddleback in Mission Viejo area. And I ended up my first year teaching at Cerritos High School with my mother, who was there for like 40 odd years. And that was kind of fun. And it was trial by fire. I not only was an English teacher for three different grades, but I was also the yearbook advisor for my first year of teaching on campus. So I figured if I can muscle through this first year, I could do anything. And I've taken that to heart. So here I am launching my own nonprofit business, as well as my own tutoring business that I've had for 3 years, which is a connection to my 13 years as a high school English teacher, because most of us had me make ends meet. And so we tutored on the sides, and so did I. It's a mobile agency. We didn't have a center. And I would often just meet briefly with my director, a sweet old woman out of Redondo Beach. And she would give me the assignments, and I would meet with the moms and dads and help the children with their studies. And in 2017, the sweet old woman said, you know what? I can see you're ambitious. You've been asking to help run the business. Would you like it? And I said, yeah. Great. And so needless to say, she didn't tell me that about five months prior to this, she thought she was just going to let it die a nice, peaceful, quiet death. And she told the other 20 instructors, go find other work. We're going to let it end. Peace to learning. And so I basically was just given a hollow shell of a tutoring service, no instructors, no center, no set resources. So I had to rebuild it from scratch. But what I did have was a connection with a nonprofit that our Peace to Learning tutoring service had been supporting for the previous 10 years. So I was able to reclaim that contract of helping underserved students in impoverished areas and those just struggling in general. And because I was the new kid on the block running the business, and I understood when the nonprofit director said, you know what, Eric, thanks, but we're going to try some other service. And so I was really disappointed. I had maybe two instructors under my belt at that time in 2017, you know, rebuilding the team. And then I started getting one or two calls from moms and dads that had been helped in the previous years. And, you know, with a somber tone in my voice, I said, you know what, they're not working with us. Let me give you the director's number, and I'm sure he'll connect you to their new tutoring service. And on the second or the third call of passing them on, I got a call from the director, and he said, what are you doing, Eric? And I said, well, I'm getting calls from your previous clients, and I'm passing them back to you so you can give them the service they need. And he said, well, why don't you come in, we'll talk. And I was able to win back that $10,000 contract.
Nice.
Because it's about giving. I figured out, in my almost 50 years of life, I figured out the way to truly sustain power is to give it to others.
Yep. Thank you so much for sharing that background story. That's amazing. I have two questions. First question is, what's your favorite thing about teaching? The second one is a big one, all right? What is your favorite movie of all time?
Oh.
Being okay. An innovation, you know, I'd love to hear your answer on that.
Oh, all right. Well, it might surprise you, but or maybe not. So the first thing, what do I love most about teaching is when kids ask questions. Because it's like anything else. If you, the only way to truly interact with one another is to ask each other questions. And that's where it leads to a better understanding of one another. And we begin to understand each other's areas of weakness and strengths, and then we better understand how to better exist with one another, whether it's in the classroom or in your relationship with your husband or your wife, your significant or your children, the workplace. It's questions that, as soon as we start telling others how they think or how they feel or making assumptions, making statements, that tends to lead to disagreements or people creating distance from one another. And that's not a way to move forward. My answer to that, the short answer, and you could tell I was an English teacher because I love to talk. But I also have a response to that, is the fact that on day one, I would often tell them, I'm not the only teacher here, that every single one of you has some knowledge that we don't have, none of the rest of us do. And in you being able to share that information makes you a teacher just as much as I am one too. So we're going to cultivate an atmosphere where we all feel good sharing our knowledge with one another. So that allowed me to take a step back and allow them to start learning from one another. Because that's what real learning is when we feel the collaborative learning, the sharing with one another, the building of respect and trust, were things that I really strove to ignite inside my classroom. Your other question about my favorite movie, Good Will Hunting.
Oh.
Good Will Hunting. I'm sorry, I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a downtrodden young man that has a beyond brilliant mind and surrounded by guys that you would normally just pass by as, you know, school dropouts, trying to make a living, doing whatever, and not really having any ambition. But the fact that they recognized how special Will was, and the fact that they supported him, and the fact that his friend towards the end, Ben Affleck's character, tells him, you know, a real true friend is real with you. And he says, you don't owe it to yourself to follow through this with this brilliance that you have. You owe it to us, and you owe it to everyone on this planet. Because the good can come from what you do. You just have the courage, need the courage to step through and follow it. And I impart that with my kids. You know, be courageous enough to ask questions and reveal to others that you don't have all the answers. And in doing that, you become more wise, not only intelligent, but wise. As soon as you say you know everything, you might as well just walk off the stage. Because when you say you know everything, then there's nothing else to learn. So I don't see the point to life without learning and then sharing those wisdoms and bits of knowledge with one another.
I think that's the truth. Like, you have to continue learning as you get older because things are constantly changing around you, right? We're not living in the same world we were living in 10 years ago. So once you always have that student mentality, you're going to keep up with the trends. You're going to be present in what's going on around you. And I think that's important. You were talking about courage just now. You know, you've had a successful teaching career, you know, the tutoring business sounds like it's doing great, but what was that courage, what was that push that made you want to go ahead and start a nonprofit now and take on that new task?
Well, it goes to the second half of our mission being to academically support underserved parents. And what that came from was my 13 years working at Lenox Academy of Math, Science, and Technology as their English teacher. During that tenure, I also created a drama and an animation program to serve our children. But during, again, that career at that school site, it is a small Hispanic community just inland of Inglewood in South Bay, LA. And so I had to practice my Spanish. I'm half Mexican. And I would muscle through it. And my go-to was always, usa otras frases y palabras, por favor. Because I knew that there was a word or there was a phrase that I would have a better understanding that to move the conversation forward. Yeah. And it was, what was interesting is I would often get this like side kind of turn to their head because they were like, what, you want me to use another word for the one I just used? And that really speaks to, we all walk through this life with a set lexicon that we use from our 9 to 5, you know, interaction with people. And then every once in a while, out of the blue, someone will say, well, what do you mean? Use another phrase. And that, in a sense, in those little parent teacher meetings, I was forcing them to step outside their surroundings, you know? And in addition to that, I recognized where their boundaries were inside their own mind, in the sense that I had a lot of parents from El Salvador or Guatemala, and they're coming to make a better life for themselves and their kids. And oftentimes, you know, I would tell them the challenges that their child has, and I would say, can you help me continue the education once they get home? And their typical response was, I have a second or third grade education. I can't possibly help you in this level of academia.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank God I was an English teacher, because I would simply say, Ask them about the story. Just ask them, tell me about the story. What are you guys learning in the class? What are the characters about? And that's it. And let them talk. And if they're able to share something, you're helping me out. Now, if I was a chemistry teacher, I have no idea what I would be saying. But the fact of the matter is that experience, that ongoing year-to-year experience of having them, hearing them say, I only have this much education, I can't help my child, but I'm going to spend my time working 2 to 3 dead-end jobs at the Marshalls, the local Del Taco, the Ross clothing store. My child, the eldest, your student in the classroom, they're my surrogate parent when myself and my spouse are working our evening jobs. That would cause extreme strife inside our classrooms because that child was getting done being mom or dad until like maybe 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, then doing their homework, sometimes up to 1 a.m, coming to school tired, frustrated. Mom and dad were frustrated because they were working 2 or 3 dead-end jobs. That frustration would spill out to each other or the kids, and all of it would culminate back into the classroom. So that is what pushed me to say, look, I want to create a nonprofit like the one I was helping with our tutoring service in South Bay, LA, and create that same dynamic. But now thinking about it, we have an opportunity not only to help the kids K through 12, but to help their parents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about where my life has been spent, mostly in South Bay, LA, so you have Boeing, Northrop Grumman, SpaceX right there in Inglewood and Hawthorne. So you have technology there. You have Irvine, South Orange County. You have Applied Medical, which does scientific surgical devices and innovation. So you have these two hubs of technology and mind-growing advances. Why can't we find places for those that are struggling with their academics and struggling with their place as parents to provide better opportunities for them to have one job that provides benefits and gives them room for growth? Because I know for a fact that most of the space industry in South Bay, LA has people with GEDs, have people with simply a high school diploma, but it's giving them opportunities for growth, offering them different coursework, which is part of what we want to do in our long-term growth as well. So in that way, maybe everyone starts feeling better about their lives, and maybe it, as a direct response to that, our children in high school don't have to be the surrogate parents because mom and dad actually get done with their work at 5. You know? So there's benefits for everyone.
Absolutely. Can you share with us what type of programs do you offer helping kids, I know, as well as adults? Could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah. Let me, I have a lot of programs, to be honest with you, but I wanted to narrow it down to what we're dealing with right now, which of course everyone knows being COVID. And so I have probably about 11 programs, but I think we're going to focus more intently on about 5 of them. The first one being the school support program. And that's the idea. And I know you guys have heard of learning pods, you know, moms getting together, primarily moms and some dads, and having their children being taught in close settings. Really, I find no more than 3 to 1, I mean, 3 students to 1 instructor is ideal to really utilize that instructional time and to be able to focus on each of those students within that time period. So 3 to 1. And what the school support program is different from any of just like moms getting together on Facebook and getting their kids together with an instructor is that I want to work more intently with the idea of what my instructors would be more intent on. What is it being taught at the school site in real time? And what is the scheduling program? So in addition to my nonprofit and having my own tutoring service, that in addition to that, I'm a substitute teacher for 3 of the South Orange County districts, being Irvine, Saddleback, and Capistrano. I know,
Eric,
you laugh.
What
like,
don't you do? What don't you do, Eric?
I don't have a girlfriend right now. I don't do romance right now. Shocker, right? I want to make time for that, but it's seriously, I don't. Oh, also, I'm a researcher in microbial energy sourcing and nanotechnology. So talk about growth. I never thought I'd like sciences, but now in my like mid-40s, I was like, this is an interesting time in our lives, and I want to be a part of it, which is going to be another connection to education and children and adult students in sustainable energy. So I have this uncanny idea of connecting things.
Mm-hmm.
And I love connecting things. Even when other people don't see that they're connected, I give time and meditation and I just let it simmer. And then eventually a connection is made. But back to your question about my programs.
Yes.
So the school support program would be a 3-to-1 key class where we're going to support those kids that are struggling with homelessness, or maybe they have a home environment that's not conducive to learning online right now. So what we would do is we would take the time to find out which students and which parents are open to having two other students come to their home, which we would use as the home base so they can get their online instruction in that setting, a sustainable and safe place to learn from. And we would also provide meal plans, because I'm well familiar with the Dollar Tree, having struggled myself and knowing that there's means of getting decent and actually healthy food, mostly in the frozen form, but vegetables and fruits and things that kids need to grow and sustain. Because if the body's not fed, the mind can't be fed either, you know. So we would have focus on those kids and fulfill those needs, the home security, as well as after their online instruction is done, we would then bring them to a local park where we would have three separate little collaborative learning labs, where we would have three teams of three, and each one would spend 55 minutes at one little learning lab that focused on the academics of what's being taught at the school site. The other would be the creative arts, be it music or dance or artwork, or even creative writing. And then the third little lab would be something in recreations or athletics. And then they would rotate for like 3 hours, one for each lab. And then by then it's like 3 or 4 o'clock and mom and dad come and pick them up. But the main strategy is understanding that school site. Do they do half and half early bird, late bird? Do they just do everyone on Mondays and Wednesdays, you know, a full day of instruction, and Fridays, you know? So every different school site within every different district has their own kind of regimen. And so we need to be aware of that and work a program that works with that. And so we can give the best and supportive instruction for that school site. And of course, help the parents in giving their child the best support as possible as well. So that's one. The Step Up Student Health Program is to get more nursing students inside our hospitals, because obviously we need them. I mean, we're hearing about LA County and LA City right now deciding not to give oxygen to some people that might be on the brink of death because they're having to hang on to those oxygen tanks for, you know, COVID and other needs. It's a horrible situation where they have to make decisions about whether or not someone's going to live or die because our COVID situation has gotten so bad. And we keep hearing that now there's a question of whether or not we have enough staff. It's not that we have open beds, but who's going to be helping those patients in those beds. So I would like to address those students, nursing students that are having trouble with their studies and reaching out to the private colleges here in Orange County and connecting them with more advanced students at the community colleges. So that's why we call it Step Up. We're giving an opportunity for the younger, less experienced student, but advanced academically, to help those that are further along in a program of nursing. And so they both get something reciprocal. One, the younger student gets to learn more about what's waiting for them in a more advanced program. And the more advanced student gets to actually better understand the fundamentals they need to do better in their coursework from the skill level of the younger student. And if it does well, then we want to step it down and have the advanced high school students in some of the medical and nursing programs in the area reach out and help the community college student that's a little further along. So
that's
another program that we want to roll out. Then we have the pop-up pencil project. And Keys to Learning, its logo is a little pencil that's built like a little house. And so I looked at it and went, oh my God, we can create little tank gazebos on the side of the soccer fields, the baseball fields, the football fields, the skate park, the tennis court, the beach volleyball court. And that way mom and dad don't have to play bus driver going from home to the mathnasium, to the soccer field, back home. You just go straight to where they're going to practice an hour before the practice, and we'll give them their homework instruction and supportive academic support there. And then they literally step right onto the field from our little gazebo. Or maybe it's a situation where they're in a rough area, maybe low-income apartment housing, and being in their living room just isn't a great place to be for that after-school support. We can create, there's a lot of little local parks. We can create our tent community there and, you know, organize where kids can come safely and get instruction that way as well. And that creates another reciprocal benefit. So if I had an AYS program or a baseball little league program, I could say I'm partnering up with Grades for Good, offering free instruction. Just bring your children to our sports program an hour before practice, and they'll be serviced that way as well.
That's another awesome program, Eric. that's amazing.
I got two more.
Okay.
So Beyond Bars would be giving academic support to juvenile incarcerated youth, as well as those that have recently been released from juvenile hall and similar facilities. And I know that's a program that is, thank God, is in place, but I know that it's been highly undervalued and utilized. There was a statistic, I can't say for certain, but it was 5, maybe 6 years ago, where LA County was getting over 90% failure rate for their juvenile individuals passing their needed required testing. So I knew there's a need for it, and I know there's a continued need, but where we want to do differently is infuse what I've done with our tutoring business, which is understand the learning style of that student, where their strengths are they auditory, are they visual, are they kinesthetic, where are their weak points, and I know there's a subset of all these different learning styles, but getting a nuanced understanding of it in order to deliver the lessons in a more effective manner. And a lot of these people that these young individuals, that what's not being addressed is the fact that they might be on the spectrum. They might be dealing with cognition issues like dyslexia or dyscalculia. And the fact that that needs to be addressed along with how they learn. And bringing those two together would create a better lesson plan to get them the success that they want when they're ready to get out. In addition to that, we want it delivered not by a middle-aged or a younger person, but by a retired instructor. So the idea is, you know, there's a lot of social issues that go into why a young person might get themselves involved with criminal activities. And I always loved the idea of my memories with my grandfather and grandmother and all the time they spent with me raising me, and how I have an affinity to work with people that are older than myself, you know, two generations older than myself. And maybe by allowing an older person to deliver this instruction with someone in an incarcerated situation, they can create a bond with one another. And when that child, when that young person comes out of incarceration, they can start feeling a sense of sympathy or empathy for those that aren't like them, those that are older. They can start understanding different perspectives because they're having those small conversations between question one and question five. You know, those are the moments when real learning is given a chance to bloom, because that's the trust that's built between the student and their instructor. It's those little side questions and getting to know one another and getting to understand one another allows you to step outside of your comfortability zone and try to push yourself to do better. There's there's programs inside some universities that allow you to put like a big bodysuit on with weights and like put on visors that limit your vision. So you start understanding physically on a physiological level what it is to be 85 years of age, you know, or 75 years of age. And all those little things that we take for granted, they have to deal with on a minute-to-minute basis. And I would love to be able to put some of that into our program. So not only is the student understanding the mind frame of their older instructor, but they maybe can get a sense of what they have to go through physically in the later part of their life. And maybe that can translate to a better perspective when they get out of the juvenile system. And then finally, the last one is the new parents for pathways. And that goes back to what I was saying about mom and dad having a second or third grade education and feeling that they can't really help their students at the high school level. Is getting identifying the communities that need to get out of that two or three dead end job circumstance and connecting them with businesses and innovative sectors that give them room for growth, understanding what are the basic science, math, and even English skills that they might need, and then providing that to them with an understanding that they will be given an opportunity for an entry-level job in these areas of innovation to give some more security to their family.
The programs are just like so thoughtful. You know, I mean, you have put a lot of energy and they're just great, great ideas, and they're completely different with the overall vision of helping people in education. I absolutely love those programs that you described.
Thank you.
And I know, Eric, you built your nonprofit in one of the craziest years, 2020, right? So,
<Yeah.
laughs> you know, the question that I have for you is like, I guess, how did it impact you building a nonprofit in 2020? And then also what things or what changes did you feel like you made compared to what you were seeing in other nonprofits that's going to make you successful, like moving forward?
Okay. Well, I gave that some thought too. And yes, definitely. We just got our 501c3 in May. So like I said, we're brand new. And part of reaching out to you guys is hoping that I could build a network of significant partnerships and strategic associates that will help us roll out and support these programs to do good for families in need. But the tutoring business took a hit in 2020, to say the least. We had a growing team here in South Orange County as well as in South Bay LA that I grew just as a new idea to, you know, create a new presence in the Orange County area as well as mm-hmm. South Bay LA. And it was doing well, but as soon as COVID hit in March, we took like a 90%. We had maybe 15 to 20 families here in Orange County, and it whittled down to one or two. And thank God that we muscled through it. The good and bad to having a mobile tutoring agency is that you don't have the monthly overhead of having a location that you have to pay for the lights, you have to pay for water and the lease of the facility. It's really, you know, more than 90% of our income goes to the payroll of our instructors. And that kind of speaks to me identifying my instructors as my teammates. I don't have a business entity unless I have instructors to fulfill those missions.
Right.
And I intend to keep that kind of frame of mind intact as we move into the nonprofit state, and also to turn my instructors into staffers and board members and people of interest that can help us in other ways. We took a 90% hit. In September and October, though, families started coming around and asking if they could get online support. What's interesting is the big change that's happened is not only are we getting mostly moms, asking not only can you help Jimmy with his third grade education with his math or science, but also he's dealing with a sense of loneliness and seclusion. Maybe he gets angry with himself easier. He's more agitated or dealing with anxiety, all due to the fact that he doesn't physically can interact with his classmates. Everything is online. And we are very communal creatures, even those that are introspective and introverts. we still need to get out and connect. And now I'm not proposing to go run out and have a big party or anything, but create some opportunities for children to interact as safely as possible. Knowing that, we're starting to see a return of the in-person instruction. Because I have to tell Mrs. Smith, you want us to deal, I have a large group of young instructors that are well-trained in special needs and ABA, applied behavioral analysis, and understanding the psychology of helping a student as well. Just being a young person can be a bit crazy and daunting in itself, but COVID has put an extra spin on that. But I remind Mrs. Smith that we need to do the in-person if you really want us to be effective and impactful and positive way with your child that's having these emotional issues or dealing with things on a psychological level. We need to be with them in one way or another safely in order to make those connections with them and help them through those times.
What would you say is the long-term vision of Grades for Good? I know you guys just got started, but you were definitely an idea guy. I'm sure you have like the kind of laid out of what you would like it to look like. So I'd love to hear that.
All right. So like I said, I like to connect dots, right?
Yep.
So buckle up. So it all starts with the K-12 instruction. All right. You got to help out the kids. And then from the kids, we want to prove our value to those children and to their parents. And then from there, leap from K-12 instruction to help out mom and dad. Because oftentimes that child that's on the spectrum with autism, or the child dealing with dyslexia or dyscalculia, mom or dad or both might have some degree of those same challenges. So we want to start reaching out to them. We have populations that are dealing with ESL, not just for their son or daughter, but they could use some support with their English acquisition as well. And then moving from that, from parent support and academia to corporate instruction. So instead of just helping, And South Orange County is a perfect example. We have San Juan Capistrano, largely Latino-based. We have Irvine, largely Asian-based. Both of them, you want to play the stereotype demographics. Yes, one is more affluent than the other, but they're both struggling with their English acquisitions. Who's to say that we can't move from just helping a single mom or dad learn their English to then going to their place of business and say, hey, if you have 5, 10, 15, or 20 people in the same circumstance, we would like to support your staff, learn their English skills or their math skills, their science skills, whatever you need them to do. But ESL looks like a good gateway to help open up corporate instruction. In addition, those that are English speakers since day one, I can't tell you the number of times I speak to people that manage engineers, my father being one of them. He's a supervisor at SoCal Edison, and he's been with SoCal for many decades, and he has a team of engineers. And he went through the teaching program with me at Cal State Fullerton, which is another story because we both had the last name and our first professors. We had three courses together, and each professor said, oh, are you guys brothers? I was so angry. He loved it. He was on cloud nine. I was like, oh, what, this old guy? Are you kidding me? But he went through the teaching. He went on to become a special needs instructor for a few years before returning to SoCal Edison. And with that understanding of teaching, he would read his engineer reports and he would say, Eric, I can't read this. It's like Greek to me, you know, or Latin. And he would literally give his engineers lessons on active voice senses, placing the subject before the active verb, and then what is it that the verb is affecting. And that made their reports so much easier for my father, their supervisor, and his supervisors above him. And so I know there's a need for even those that are well-grained in English to better their skills in writing to those that are outside the scientific community. And then from the corporate instruction to moving into sustainable energy education and innovation production. Like I said, over the last few years, I've gotten into researching. I'm kind of a research associate. I'm not part of the biomimicry community, but I am definitely a volunteer, and I spend time with a few of the people in that space, and I've grown a great love for it. So biomimicry is understanding and researching nature and its processes and the organisms within it, we being one of those organisms, and how do they utilize nature to be effective participants of this planet. And I think we as humans have forgotten a lot of that, you know, hence our plastic and our waste and all that stuff, and utilizing our energy. We waste so much of it. So they're talking about creating microgrids, small power grids to help large areas in times of blackouts or brownouts, natural disasters, which are all, unfortunately, you know, up ahead of us as climate change grows. Mm-hmm. So thinking about creating schools as little microgrid energy sources for that neighborhood. Because if you think about it, the school is the heart of a community. Young married couples, they want to have some children. What are they looking for? What school is in that area? Yep. And then from the school, you have the supermarket and the clothing shops and all your other infrastructure that you need. But it's really the school. Well, why not make that school a microgrid where they're already having sustainable energy brought in through, you see them, you pass the school site and all along the parking lot, all those coverings are full of solar powered panels, right? Well, let's push it to other kinetic forms of technology and energy sourcing, and let the kids be a part of that process too. You can open it up to their STEM programs where they're not only the place where energy is being built, but they're a part of the process. And that way, that'll give them the kind of tools they need with their imagination of just being pure kids to apply that knowledge and then do something with it when they step out of the school system.
And I think the next step after that is just taking over the world at that point, right?
Like, yes, absolutely.
So, world domination of good kids and brilliant people, you know, like that's exactly the path.
And we see it now being like I said, being a substitute. The stigma of a special needs kid is almost non-existent. I remember being in third and fourth grade, and I, you know, seeing those kids as being different and calling them names and making fun of them. And that's a cross I have to bear for the rest of my life. I feel horrible about that.
Yeah.
But what's beautiful is stepping onto an elementary or middle school campus and high school campus, and they're interacting. They're just another kid. And the love and support that they get from the rest of their classmates, that's what I want to see grow more too, you know, and hopefully they'll be better adults than we've been. That's the idea. Not saying we're bad, but we want always to be better for them
be
as
better.
Well as, yeah. That's why we're here talking, right? We want to be better.
Exactly. And if you had one advice, you know, you work with so many kids, like one advice that you can tell one child, what would it be?
Stay curious and have the courage to ask the questions that you're curious about.
Yep.
That's it. I mean, it leads to other things, and those two other things are, by asking questions, you get more in tune with your own voice. Mm-hmm. So I had in my classroom a picture, and it had a big face, and it had a big open mouth, and it said, "Find your voice," because I would tell my kids, I don't want to listen to myself for the next 9 months. I want to hear you guys. What are the questions and answers that you have for each other? And so by finding your voice, then you can get a better sense of who you are. And the second thing that drives your life after you find your voice is find your place. I'm still doing that right now.
Yeah.
I think we all do, right? And finding your place between three specific things, between your livelihood, how are you going to pay your bills? Between your family, how do you deal with mom and dad, your brother, your sister, your children, your aunts, your uncles? And finally, your passion. How do you interact with your passion? Maybe it's dance or art. Maybe it's your girlfriend, romance, whatever you're passionate about. How do you interact with that? But it starts with knowing yourself, finding your voice. Then you find your place. And it all starts from asking questions and staying curious.
So for our listeners who want to learn more about Grades for Good, how can they get in touch with you and your organization?
Well, we have a wonderful website made by my friend Jim Goins, so a little shout out for Jim. It's a website called Grades for Good. It's grades, G-R-A-D-E-S, for the number four, good, G-O-O-D.org. We have a Facebook connection. We have a new Instagram. The days of COVID have kind of put the kibosh on a lot of events, but we're looking forward to having them in the upcoming months as we all make our way out of this time of COVID.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Eric, for taking the time to just sit here and let us know about your passions and what you've been working on. And we are excited for you. Can't wait to see what the future holds. And just wanted to say, you know, thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Well, thank you again. I really appreciate it. And yeah, I will definitely keep in touch with you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Connect Kindness podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ShareGiveDo. And please remember, the world is changed by your example, not by your opinion.